Welcome back to Our Soul, a podcast by Faith Choice Ohio, Ohio's faith voice for choice.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Our Soul. We are so glad that you have joined us. And joining us also, in addition to Kelly and myself, Terry, on the podcast this week, we have the Reverend Lindsay Poklich Godwin. Lindsay, can you give a shout just so folk know what your voice sounds like?
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
We are so excited to host Lindsay in this space. Lindsay is the Program Operations Coordinator for Sacred Dignity. Sacred is an organization that we love and adore. Sacred fully stands for...
Oh, you want me to do it? I got it.
Oh, sure.
Sacred is the Spiritual Alliance of Communities for Reproductive Dignity.
That's right. I finally learned how to spell it because everything in Sacred is capital except the E in RE for reproductive dignity. It always takes me a minute to work through the meaningful acronym, but we love meaningful acronyms because they really are a sacred part of our story. And we're so excited to have Lindsay with us today to share with us not only about Sacred, but about a very special gathering that's coming up, the Sacred Gathering that is occurring in May down in New Orleans. So just interested, Lindsay, in your bio, a little about yourself, how you come to this work. All of our listeners are very interested to hear that, like, personal why. They've heard so much from Kelly and I about our backgrounds and our interests, and we always like to ask folks when they come on the podcast, like, you know, what is it about you, what is it in your spirit that has moved you to be such an integral part of this work?
Yeah, thanks so much. It's one of those questions where I'm like, I could go a thousand ways, but how do I keep myself focused, right? I think one of the things that's important for folks to know, particularly for this podcast, is that I was born and raised in Ohio. I am an Ohioan by, certainly by place and in part by heart, though I'm also a Southerner now because I've been living in the Southeast U.S. for over 20 years. But I particularly appreciate the work of Faith Choice Ohio because of those Ohio connections and because I know how complicated it is to do reproductive justice, particularly reproductive justice and faith work in Ohio. I grew up on the west side of the state in a tiny town called West Liberty, where there are more cows than people. And I oftentimes talk about growing up having way too many questions. For a little town. Tiny towns don't love it when you're like, but why are we doing this? And I don't think that makes sense. And help me understand why you just said that about that other person, because that seemed mean and wrong and messed up. And those questions were always for me tied to my faith and tied to this curiosity around God, around our community, around our bodies, around nature. And as I continued to grow, those questions continued to sort of push toward, like, wait, why are these limits around, these faith limits around what a relationship looks like? Or why does my church tell me that they love everybody and that God loves everybody, but there's also, like, some clearly overtly racist stuff happening in Sunday school, right? Like, why am I having a fight with my Sunday school teacher about how I should follow my husband when we also see stories of women doing all sorts of things in the Bible that are leadership, full of leadership and full of possibility? So that's how it started. And it continued to grow as I also tried to figure out alongside my friends, like, what does it mean? Around, what does all this mean around sex, around bodies, around gender, around all of these expectations that we're told about what it means to be, I don't know, a right person, a good person, a godly person, and all these things that really actually feel true. So that continued to unfold as I went to college and did study around religion, gender, and sexuality. Eventually I came out. So a big piece of the, like, part of this that was internal, right, became like, oh, I've also been asking these questions about myself, no matter how long I've been also been like, oh no, I'm just a really good ally. I definitely was that person. And for some folks, they would say, I would say I came out later in life in the ways in which people oftentimes think. I was in my early 20s. And that's just always where my energy has been. It's always where my curiosity has been. It's like, what is God actually calling us to when it comes to living faithfully, building community, building possibility, building a world that actually is like space for thriving for everyone? And what is clear is that only happens when we pay attention to the ways of white supremacy and colonialism are at play and being used and weaponized by religion. It only happens when we push through the binary thinking of gender and relationships and are like, oh, actually, there's all sorts of gender ways of being in the Bible and in our world. And if we believe that God created this world, then man, there's so much possibility. It's not this limited thing. And for me, a little bit further into my late 20s and 30s, I was taught about and instructed in reproductive justice frameworks, particularly through Sister Song. And it became clear that that's where I needed to put my energy. And holding on to this faith piece, is doing the wrestling with faith, and knowing that reproductive justice specifically laid out a vision for a world where everyone could thrive. Certainly some piece of that has to do with the ideas of choice and abortion, but more importantly, it has to do with building an entire world where everyone has the resources that they need and everyone has the ability to build the families that they want, build the community that they want without threat, without violence, without systematic oppression. So that's sort of the overarching thing. In there, I've been doing work I've worked as a sexuality educator for Planned Parenthood. I worked at Vanderbilt Divinity School, coordinating programming around religion, gender, and sexuality. I've done a lot of queer and trans organizing, most recently at GLSEN or with an organization called Launchpad in Nashville, where we provide housing specifically for trans and queer youth experiencing homelessness. And there's a lot of other sparkling in there. But for me, what it all comes back to is that every time I've wrestled with my faith, I have an like clear sense that God is calling us to build a world that is full of possibility, that is thriving for everyone, and that challenges all the systematic oppression, the white supremacy, the colonialism, all the pieces, the imperialism that are like pretty intensely like targeting and killing our people now.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here like listening to you, and I very much so resonate with a lot of parts of your personal story, especially like thinking that I'm an ally and then not being and realizing that really it's just, you know, definitely. And
it's a common story.
I definitely like resonate with a lot of your story. I'm very interested to just be talking to you. And for our listeners, Terry has a little bit more experience with Sacred than I have. I've never been to the Sacred gathering, but I get to go this year. I'm super excited. And just excited to learn more there and to be in this gathering of people who, I mean, I imagine think very much like you and have, you know, similar stories about wanting to create a world where everybody can just like have autonomy over their own bodies and like be at peace. You wouldn't think that that's a revolutionary idea, but you know, I think a lot about how people have like co-opted religion to be like a weapon, and it doesn't feel like that's what that should be. So yeah, I would love to hear more about like your work at Sacred, and also more about like this gathering of people and what kind of stuff they talk about there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Sacred. I'll start there and do the sort of primer so folks know who we are. We're a relatively new organization, though the work that is informed Sacred actually started in Texas and has been going on for years. And then actually you can go back deeper and deeper. I'm going to do a tiny bit of history. Like oftentimes people think that, let me back up. Actually, I'm going to be really explicit about this. The religious right and the political right want us to think that Christianity has historically always been this sort of like project of conservatism, and that everything else is like, I don't know, not religious, not appropriate, whatever. There have always been progressive Christians and progressive people of faith who are doing social justice work, right? And specifically around reproductive health and rights and justice, right? So we could look at the 60s and into the early 70s, the clergy consultation service, where clergy and clergy sort of associated folks were helping people access abortion services across all sorts of places where it was illegal and unsafe. And we have had work like that for forever. So this is in the vein of that work. Sacred specifically is a national network of folks who are multi-faith, multi-race, multi-gender, cross-sexual identities, and folks who are clergy, some who are lay leaders, folks who are activists and organizers or academics, who are all somehow understand that we have to reclaim and focus on faith as part of our work to actually build liberation or build political transformation, or all in all just push against the ways in which right-wing whoever's have tried to claim the whole of Christianity and the whole of what it means to be faithful. Sometimes when I'm talking about this, I'll say, because it is actually a political action, there have been decades of the political right seeking to like claim the narrative and be like, this is what it means to be Christian. This is what it means to be faithful. And that's tied to white supremacy. Literally, like, we could do a whole other episode around the connections between segregation and reproductive faith and reproductive justice, excuse me. But it is intentional for us to believe that these things can't be the same. They can't overlap. And what Sacred is doing, and other folks like you all and other folks of faith are saying, like, no. It is actually because of my faith that I care about building justice, and specifically reproductive justice, specifically bodily autonomy. Those are core pieces of what it means to like be created in the image of God, or to understand that there's something sacred in all of us and in our abilities to make decisions and build our lives. So Sacred's work particularly pulls together folks across all sorts of communities who care about that. And we work through education, through culture change, through community building and political organizing to build that, strengthen that sense of like, oh yeah, we can claim our faith and do this political reproductive justice work. Do you want me to keep going?
But I was just going to say, I often think about like how, you know, they say that like the winner gets to like write history, the winner tells the story or whatever. But like, and I don't like the term winner when thinking about like the political right, like winning the ability to claim the Christian narrative, because I don't think that that is something that is over. But, you know, I think about like how so much of what the widespread belief about, you know, religion, about faith, about specifically Christianity, has been determined by people who have like a lot of money and power, and you know, have a real need to keep that narrative going. And I mean, I talk a lot about on this podcast how I feel like people who have power are often just like really desperate to keep it. And it should, it seems a little, how you say, insecure. but anyway, that's just my two cents.
It's giving very insecure. Yeah. It's giving very, you aren't comfortable with yourself, are you?
If you were so comfortable, you wouldn't need to say so much that like religious people are, you know, anti-abortion, or that religious people are, like, exclude others. And I think this whole mindset of like being a person of justice, being that part of being created in the image of God. I personally, I don't practice Christianity anymore. I don't know how to describe like my faith life, but one thing that I I do base a lot of my values and beliefs off of my upbringing in Christianity and a lot of the things I've learned from different faith experiences. And I don't understand how anybody could separate those two things, like God from justice. It just seems very inextricable from each other. So it's wild to me that, like, these, again, insecure white men, no offense, Terry, I'm not calling you insecure.
None taken, none taken, it is what it is.
Yeah, insecure white men.
Jerry Falwell and Paul Weyrich are insecure white men, were insecure white men.
Yeah, but, like, having to grasp so hard on the Christian narrative and force it into, I guess, like, this narrative of justice for some people, instead of justice for all people. And I feel like that's really just a degradation of the image of God. If we're created in the image of God and God pursues justice, to limit that to one group of people or like just one narrative is just extremely limiting.
To piggyback on that too, Lindsay, in your description of your journey to here, you mentioned sister song, and we love a good sister song definition of reproductive justice, right? We use this on a regular basis, you know, to have children, to not have children, to parent the children we do have in safe and sustainable communities, with that emphasis on autonomy and with an explicit understanding of white supremacy culture, white supremacy action, and what race has to do with all of this process. For me, when I hear you speak, I am reminded of the short definition of reproductive justice. When people say, yeah, we have the three-point definition, but, like, what does reproductive justice really mean to you? I communicate back to people that, for me, I heard through the teaching of reproductive justice this idea that human flourishing should be the default, not the exception, and that it can be. Like, that is the hopeful part of RJ, that this is not some, like, way pie in the sky, you know, over in glory land kind of concept. It is something that is the intention for the way the world ought to be, and the things we see, white supremacy, the violence of, you know, systemic political oppression, gerrymandering, whatever you want to fill in there, these injustices are blocking what is natural from being. I'm just interested to hear you reflect on, like, sacred's role in unblocking the natural flourishing that is here, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things, but one of the things that bubbles up as we're talking is, we talk about bodily autonomy, just absolutely core, and one of the ways that sacred adds to that and, like, names the faith component is to talk about moral agency, right? So if we are all, and I know not all faiths believer would say, talking about people being made in the image of God, and I think that's totally fine, but for this conversation, if we go with this idea that people are made in the image of God, that there's something sacred in divine in all of us that should be honored, and also we are not divine beings, there's, like, we're complicated and messy, then that means both we have bodily autonomy, we should be building a world where we all have bodily autonomy, and the moral agency to navigate the world in our relationship with God and our relationship with others, right? So I think that is the, like, sort of way we pull it all together really tight. And then when I think about sacred's work, or when we talk about sacred's work, we talk about it in two parts. Right now, one of the ways we're talking about it is in two parts. So one, people actually need desperate amounts of healing because of all the violence that has happened in our world, and also specifically through religion, and particularly through white Christianity or white Christian supremacy or Christian nationalism, or whichever phrase we want to use to talk about the ways in which Christianity is being used to perpetuate violence. Like, the shame, the stigma, the harm, the disconnection from our bodies, the disconnection from pleasure, and that our bodies are capable of pleasure, and that can be a good thing. People need healing from that. And so through our education, through our, we have a curriculum that we train people to be facilitators in their communities and congregations, that opens up the space for folks to start to do some of that healing, to start to have conversations that we so often are scared to have. And then the other piece of that is, like, it's not just like, okay, yeah, you are getting healed, you are opening up, you maybe you're doing some of that in community. You also then need to translate that into organizing, into action, into working in your community, in your place to make a change, whether that is a congregation. We've got a few congregations that are part of our designated process. We're going to continue to add more designated sacred congregations. The one of them in Florida is working on their ballot initiative and working on getting people signed up to support the ballot initiative and vote in a way that supports reproductive justice.
You know, we love a good ballot initiative in Ohio. Let's take a moment just to celebrate that again.
So many votes y'all had to take. It was wild. So it is both the healing and the organizing. And I'm gonna pivot us back to the gathering, because that is really the purpose of the gathering is an opportunity to bring folks together from across the country, from across congregations and movement and reproductive justice and activists and academics, to help us, one, like, build up our skills, right? Like, increase the tools in our toolbox so we have more ability to build healing and organizing out in the world, but also to build connections, right? One of the biggest ways that the political right wins is because we feel isolated, because we feel like we're the only one who thinks this in our family, or the only one who thinks this in our community, or like, I can't talk about this because people will, and sometimes people will say terrible things. You know, say you can't be part of my community, or I'm going to try and keep you out of my school or my library or what have you. But when we reduce that isolation and we build community, not only do we feel more confident in our ability to claim a truth, right? To claim a radical, transformative, faithful truth, we also have more community to do it with. So the Sacred Gathering helps us build those connections and build that community. It also is a place to learn and deepen analysis. So folks who are new to this, who are like, something about this makes sense, but I don't know what RJ is. When you say white supremacy, I think you're talking about like just not liking white people. No, no, no. Like, let's deepen our analysis around all of those things. So that is what we can expect out of the gathering. We're also folks, like, we know that sharing meals, sharing laughter, sharing stories, that those things are really vital to organizing, that those things are really vital to our movements. And so there will be lots of that. We're going to be in New Orleans, which brings its own spirit and fun and joy. And we're going to have some amazing workshops. We're going to have some amazing speakers. I'm just going to go ahead and say it now. There's going to be some Faith Choice Ohio representation in there. Who will also help give us some vision, right? So the other, I think particularly Black feminists have reminded me over and over again, you have to have an imagination. You have to build imagination. You have to imagine the world that we're building, right? And so there will be visionary folks who will be on our main stage, who will be in our workshops helping us imagine what this new future looks like. And I will say one more thing. I talked a little bit about that we have this curriculum that we train people to be facilitators of. Folks can get trained as facilitators at the gathering. So that will be one of the workshop options on Wednesday. So you can come get your facilitator training on and be ready to take this back to your community. And you do not have to be an expert. We give you a really detailed curriculum, and it's we're continually updating it, but we hand you some resources so y'all can dig into the conversation and start the healing and organizing for your own space. Yeah.
I love the focus specifically on healing, and also you mentioned pleasure. I have folks on the podcast know how much I love Adrienne Marie Brown. I have actually been on a nonfiction. I will not touch anything that's not fiction right now. But you talking about like pleasure and talking about how we need to have this imagination of the future, and also how that starts from a place of healing personally. I mean, that Adrienne Marie Brown talks a lot about that, and you're nodding, so I hope you've read her stuff. I love her so much. But pleasure activism and emergent strategy are like two books that changed my view on what justice looks like and how it starts with like doing that inner healing, and how important that is. And I think people often will focus on like, what is that action step? But when you were talking about healing, learning, and then also action is very important, but it's not like the first thing. And I think like so often as somebody who's like only worked in nonprofits my whole life, I understand that like there's often this sense of urgency. There's often, you know, the opposition is very strong and does have a lot of resources and does continually attack, you know, our rights and needs and, you know, freedom. But also before we can start defending ourselves and getting to a place where we can have that freedom and joy and like just better future, we have to start with healing ourselves. Because, and I talk about this in our restorative and transformative justice training, you know, if we are not defeating the capitalism, the incarcerator, the, you know, they say like kill the cop in your head. I don't like such violent language, but if we don't heal that part of ourselves, the only thing we're going to do is create a aggressive system that does good things, but also like to what end? We need to make sure that we are healed before we can like create something else. And so I think like when you're talking about eating together, having joy together, focusing on healing together is like a really important part of organizing. I like 100% agree. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah. Can we retire the cop in our heads?
Yeah.
Maybe that's like, get them to quit.
Right. Like retrain the cop in our heads to sell ice cream. Like there's gotta be something. Yeah. I just want to put in a plug for the fantastic curriculum. I have gone through the curriculum training. I have to say, as a person who specializes in this work, and theology in particular, I found the curriculum like so remarkably deep and broad. If anybody is a child of the 80s, I think of Bonanza Buffet, right? Like this old school buffet with a million options on it, and you put together a really good meal every time you train, you're never going to be able to eat it all because it's just not possible. But the depth of research that's in this curriculum, as well as the ease with which people who aren't experts can access it, is really profound for me. I feel comfortable that anybody at any level of theological training, from complete novice to double PhDs, retired and came back for more, can find something in this curriculum that excites them and that they want to share with others that is transformational.
Yeah. Thanks so much for that. A live plug. Appreciate it, Terry. To your point, Kelly, I think the other, like, part of how we're starting to think about it, and I think other folks have thought about it, is like, it's also a cycle, mm-hmm. right? Like, you've got to do some healing, you've got to do some learning, then you can take some action, then you learn from that action, you're like, oh, I still have this other thing. Yeah. Like, oh, like, it has to be an ongoing process. And that's particularly like, white folks want to have the action, have it be the right action, and then have it be a fix, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the way whiteness has trained us into being. I shouldn't say white folks. Anyone can act that out because it's what we've been taught culturally, but it's a particularly a piece of whiteness. And we're just like, no, that this is relational, number one. We have to do this in relationship. And it is like that emergent strategy thing. Mm-hmm. Like there's things that are going to happen in little bits over mm-hmm. here, and that's a fractal there. And then it's going to build over here and expand and then take this new route. That is very much our approach to organizing, is that we are in this growth, and the sex educator in me is going to say womb to tomb. we have learning to do, we have healing we can do, and we have actions we can take. And so it's inviting folks into that process. Mm-hmm.
And I think like also to the point where Terry was talking about how big meal, you're not going to eat it all. It makes me think about how we have like trainings that we give. It's like the same content, but we're giving it over and over again. And I think like every time, even as a trainer, when I'm doing trainings with other people, I learn something new every time. And I think in a similar way, that kind of cycle of healing, like building community and taking action and then going back to healing, I think in a similar way, when you do those kind of trainings, even if you're the kind of the double PhD person, like every time you come into a group of different people, you come into a group with different knowledge. I think of myself, I have this tattoo on my arm that has all these like interconnecting lines, and it represents that, like, I believe when we are in community with other people, I am bringing the whole of myself and like my history and my past and the things I've experienced into every connection that I have with another person. And they too also bring all of the parts of themselves that I believe will ultimately, you know, improve my life, improve their life by connecting with each other. We grow through connecting with each other. And if we're thinking about emergent strategy, thinking about the ways that like the root systems that bind and join together to make a stronger base and foundation, and just the importance of community. I could go all day just talking, yes, about that.
All of that.
But it has been great talking with you. We'll have to definitely have you back sometime to talk more. But it has been great to talk to you. And for those of you who are listening, Terry and I will be recording the next time Terry and I are together. We will be at Sacred recording. So that's May 7th through 9th is when Sacred is. And we will be recording there. Until then, Terry and I are having a guest-a-palooza leading up to our 100th episode, where you will be experiencing a variety of guests over the next month or so as we lead up to our 100th episode. So get excited, and we will be back, the two of us, in that date range in May. But until then, please enjoy all the guests we will be having in the next month or so.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Our Soul. If you'd like to hear more of our conversations on religion, abortion access, and all things repro, you can find all our episodes on Podbean, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. For more content, training, and other information, check us out at faithchoiceohio.org.